Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 44, Hyper-V Lessons Learned. Here we go. Today, I am lucky to have back with me Femi Adegoke. How you doing, Femi?
Rick, I'm fine. How are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good. We're coming up on the Thanksgiving holiday here in the U.S. I think I'm ready for a break. I don't know about you.
I am too.
Cool. Do you have any big plans, time off, anything coming up?
No, we're just going to hang out with the family and the kids. I guess eat some food and, you know, the usual stuff.
Right on, right on. So, Femi, can you give everyone a quick, introduction? I know you've been on the podcast before, but for those who don't know, tell them who Femi Adegoke is.
Well, by day, I work for a healthcare company in the Los Angeles area where I try to take care of all things IT-related. And at night, I guess I try to break stuff. That's pretty much it.
That's a good cycle you've got going on, kind of a self-feeding mechanism. I like it.
Yes.
Well, cool, Femi. So we're going to talk about Hyper-V today. And, you know, I specifically chose you because I know that you're using Hyper-V. And I want to talk about lessons learned. And I'm going to go through a couple of different topics. And I just, you know, really want to inform the listening audience what we've come across as different or learning opportunities, a.k.a. something we broke and then fixed, about Hyper-V. For me, coming from a VMware background, they're very different technologies. But in the end, I think, you know, if you put forth the right effort, you can get where you need to go. And I know that you've been down that road and been checking things out, and so far so happy with Hyper-V. Is that right?
That is correct.
So I guess the first thing I'll start off with is storage. You know, storage is so different from compared to VMware. Are you using any CSV volumes, or are you all direct attached storage?
No, I'm SAN based.
Okay.
And really, that's one of the things I'd like to talk about.
Sure.
Is storage. So let me get on my soapbox here for a second,
okay,
Rick.
Okay, I got a seatbelt. Okay, I'm ready.
Now, one of the things obviously about storage, Rick, is, as you know, out in the field today, there's a lot of storage possibilities. You know, you got your big boys, you know, the big irons. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we can mention names. You know, the EMCs, the Dells,
yep, HP,
the HPs,
Hitachis.
Yeah. Okay. And one of the things, Rick, for me is, you know, at the end of the day, what does storage do? Really, you know, if we broke it down real simple, it stores stuff. Okay. And, you know, no matter, you can look at a storage array that's $1 million and one that is, you know, a few dollars. They all have a couple of things in common, right?
Mm-hmm.
They got some kind of chassis. They use hard drives. They've got a RAID controller of some sort, and they've got some kind of OS.
Sure.
So I think a lot of times at the end of the day, people kind of get stuck on, you know, I'm a NetApp guy. I'm an HP guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a this guy. And the only thing I can tell people is if you're getting into this today, luckily there are a lot of options, you know, whether it's hardware based from some of the big iron guys or the ones where you install software on, you know, a piece of x86 hardware,
mm-hmm,
and you turn it into a SAN, you know.
Are you doing that with like software SAN on commodity hardware? Is that what you're doing?
I've done them both. You know, I've done some Equalogic. I've done some mm-hmm, some Dell MD series.
Mm-hmm.
But now, really, Rick, I've started looking at, from a virtualization perspective, Rick,
mm-hmm,
I've gone back and I've started looking at some of these pieces of software on x86 hardware. I mean, you know, whether it's VMware or Hyper-V, Rick, you know, we can take an IBM server, an HP server, Dell server, put your VMware, put your Hyper-V on it, or Citrix, or whatever it is, right, for doing server virtualization, and nobody ever complains. You know, at that point, the brand kind of goes away, right?
Right. The only catch, though, is how scalable, how manageable, and because there's no real intrinsic storage features that are going to really be a night and day difference that's going to say, you know what, that's not going to work, with the exception of the VMware HCL, which it's actually just, that's more of a checkbox thing. It's not like, you know, it's not going to work. It's just, is it supported? So my only question really is on the scale and support of that, because, you know, I'm with you, Femi. I've gone both ways too. And really, when I scale out or design a storage environment, you know, assuming that I can get whatever I need for the requirements that that are set forth, I might consider, I'll just throw one out there, like the free NASs of the world, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's OpenFiler, there's Nexenta, there's OpenE, there's a whole bunch of those, StarWind, there's a whole bunch of those software, SAN softwares, and those are just the ones off the top of my head. But then compared to the, you know, the traditional storage products, yeah, there's cost. There's a learning curve, I'd even say, because no storage product is the same in terms of the features and the management interface and what you have to deliver from a support standpoint. I'd even actually, on the first category, throw a Windows Storage Server into that.
Exactly. Yep.
Actually, is that, I don't know if you're using that one yet.
I've played with that one also. Yes.
Yeah. So it's like you always have options. And here's the warning I'll say. Okay. You can always buy lesser expensive storage. Okay. That's the one area of technology that if you keep looking, you will find a storage solution that just keeps going down and down in price, all the way down to free, really, on the software, and then you supply the hardware of your own. And then on the Hyper-V side, really, you've got a lot of options because Windows, a.k.a. the operating system most closely aligned with Hyper-V, has an incredible driver ecosystem, right? So really, anything you can get, you can use for Hyper-V storage, whether or not that CSV storage is another. I think they need SCSI 3 persistent reservations.
Correct.
So that's not everything, but I will say that that's usually not a showstopper because a lot of people are doing iSCSI direct to a host and then provisioning VMs directly on there, not necessarily shared. Are you doing CSV or have you tried it?
I've done some CSV, but currently in my lab because I have another third party software on top of Hyper-V,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't require CSV.
So that's right.
Okay. CSV is there, but the only thing that's on those CSV volumes are the config files for the VMs.
Gotcha. I'm going to go on a soapbox here too, Femi.
All right.
It's on CSV. Okay, so CSV is clustered shared volumes, which is a shared storage technique. I won't call it a shared storage technique. It's a shared VHD technique for Hyper-V VMs. We agree on that as a definition?
That's good. Yes.
Sounds good. Okay. Failover Cluster Manager is the tool formerly known as Microsoft Clustering Services within Windows, right? So it's effectively a service or a clustered resource for VHD files, okay?
Yep.
So we have a little interface to do it. And there's, you know, some nuances to it, right? For Windows, you have to have Enterprise or higher, okay? So that keep that in
from,
mind.
From a licensing standpoint,
yeah,
yes.
From a licensing standpoint. Secondly, to make it work well, you need to have Quorum. So Quorum is a special LUN, and it also would have a special network, an isolated network, which would, you know, is best suited to allow these two or more hosts to communicate privately and establish Quorum and then manage their locking mechanism, if you will, through this special Quorum LUN. Okay, so you have a little bit of a coordinator role that goes on every host to do it. So there's part of it I really don't like, okay, and it's the failover cluster manager part. But when it's working, it's fine. It's only a problem when there's an issue, I guess is the best way to put it.
Correct.
Now, I haven't talked about System Center Virtual Machine Manager, but if you are using SCVMM, especially in any large deployment, CSV is kind of a prereq underneath of all that. So
correct.
So there's a little bit of a, you know, and I'm going to compare it to VMFS because a lot of people in the virtualization world have experience with VMware, but not necessarily with CSV. And the big difference really is VMFS is a clustered file system, right? CSV is not a file system. It's a clustered resource living on NTFS.
Yep.
And it's kind of weird because when you do it, they show up in the C drive. C cluster storage and then the volume.
Yeah, volume something. Yeah,
it
and
throws
it's not
me off
and,
every time. I just doesn't
and it's not
it.
Really there.
Yeah, exactly. So just from a differential standpoint, they're very different. but there's good things that go along with that also, meaning it's a little bit easier to troubleshoot stuff on Windows. You know, I'm more comfortable there than I am in, I don't want to call it a Linux environment, but a non-Windows environment that is what is most closely associated with the SXI. But then what I've learned, you know, back to our theme of lessons learned, is that especially with Hyper-V, you know, direct attached storage, it's not that bad. It actually performs quite well. Same with VMware, by the way. But, you know, if you're using Hyper-V and if you're not really wild about CSV volumes, you can consider using direct attached storage. Have you done any DAS installs with Hyper-V?
Haven't done any DAS installs, but just in the lab. Mm-hmm. But I think, for me at least earlier on, I really liked it. I mean, given the additional overhead, just like you've mentioned, that just like you talked about with CSV, I've always felt that the benefits of the SAN kind of just outweighed DAS.
Yes, now, I agree.
In the past, yes, SANs were more expensive, but I think in today's world, with all these options that we just talked about, mm-hmm. I want to almost say that there's almost no reason to not do something like a SAN or some type of shared storage.
Yeah, you know? I could go there, especially you know, with some of the price solutions you can get. And it doesn't have to involve CSV. That's the other important thing, right?
Right.
If you don't want the complexity of clustered shared volumes, I'll just throw out a nice SCSI situation, for example, and it's only because I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. You could provision a LUN to one Hyper-V host, format that as NTFS. Let's just call it the D drive. It's not the C drive. It's the next one. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you can drop your VMs on there. And then if you lost that host, like really, really lost that host, you could reprovision that LUN to another host and then pick them up and run them over there. Okay, right. So and that's, again, assuming that your SAN can preserve data. Right. You have an option there. I hate to do it, but I'll just mention it. We have a backup product coming out, by the way, that's going to address Hyper-V backups, so stay tuned for that. Okay, I'll get off my other soapbox there. But, you know, the takeaway is you can really design – in Hyper-V, just like you can in VMware, you can design your storage pretty much to any budget, any performance level, or any architecture that you're looking for. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
I think that CSV is kind of a stopgap, and I hate to say that. I hate to use that word because I kind of had a peek into the future with Hyper-V R3 and Windows Server 8. By chance, Femi, have you dabbled into that any at all?
I've got it running in my lab right now, it looks, you know, it looks good.
Oh, it looks really good. I've never been so excited for a Windows Server release. I'll be honest with you there. But what's coming with Hyper-V, and specifically, I don't think at this point there's been enough push and press assigned to it. But I think it's SMB 2.2.
Correct. Yep.
Is coming with Hyper-V R3. And that will allow a lot of features with our virtual machines. I think you can even run them over UNC.
That is correct.
So if you have a host on server A, and then you have a, let's just say, a file server running Windows Server 8, and he's holding the VMs, you know, it can function like that shared storage resource, or you could, of course, run them locally. But you can migrate them, and really it's taking away a lot of barriers. So I personally think we might see CSV kind of go the wayside of Hyper-V R3. That's just my prediction, but to be determined.
I like to call that the poor man's live migration.
Well, I wouldn't call it poor man's because it's getting pretty feature on par with VMware's technology. So, well, costs always depend. Well, I'll stay away from that. So let's move on to the next topic, virtual machine provisioning. So do you do much with Hyper-V libraries for virtual machine base installs, or do you treat them like physical servers? Do you pixie boot, use Windows deployment services, build them each by hand? How do you go about the deployment process on Hyper-V? Because I'll be honest with you, I have not yet refined that myself.
And like you, I'm still, you know, I'm always thinking about how to refine that process, and I've tried them both ways. I really like the WDS thing. Mm-hmm. you know, it takes a little work to set up initially, but once it's done, the whole Pixie boot thing, I really like that, you know.
And it also works for physical servers, is that right?
Absolutely.
So that's,
absolutely.
You know, I'll give a notch for a consistent deployment mechanism, because then it gets kind of tacky, right? Oh, it's a VM, I got to do it this way. If it's a physical server, I got to do it this way. Oh, if it's a Hyper-V VM, I got to do it this way. vSphere VM, do it that way. And I'm also going to go one step further and assume that we're in a Windows Server 2008 or higher world, right? So that the integration driver, it's not VMware tools, Rick. Integration services, the drivers are, you know, integration services are built into Windows Server 2008, so that helps us all too.
Correct.
Are you still dealing with Windows Server 2003, especially on new deployments, or is it only holdouts?
You know, the only time I do 2003 now is if I've got some type of legacy app. But everything I do, I try to make sure is, I try not to even do 2008. I try to do R2. Everything minimum, you know, R2 and up.
Right.
But, you know, you still have one or two of these legacy apps that require, you know, 2003.
Yeah. I mean, depending on the size of your environment, but definitely on the net new, I'm with you. Go with 2008 R2. How about Server Core? Have you done much with Server Core?
You know, Rick, I tried that once, and you know, I get the whole thing about, you know, attack surface and all that stuff, blah blah blah. But honestly, that thing's just a pain in the ass.
Oh, okay. Well, those are your words, not mine. Okay, but I again going on the Windows Server 8 route is that, you know, that they're gonna, you know, be pushing Server Core, so keep that in mind. But I'll take Server Core kind of a sideways angle, Femi, and
okay.
I've used the Hyper-V operating system. So have you done that, or have you always done add the Hyper-V role?
No, I always add the Hyper. You mean doing Core or just the standard stuff?
Well, yeah. So like Hyper-V can exist in, let's say, two different ways. It can exist on a regular Windows server, adding the Hyper-V role. That's one way. And the other way I see it existing is on the Hyper-V operating system.
Okay. Oh, you're talking about the free
yeah,
part?
Yeah, the free one. I want to call it MUI just because that's the name of the ISO. Okay, it's got that little string in there.
No, I've always done adding the role.
Okay, and that's regardless if it's Core or the full install on Windows. It's still adding the role.
Adding
to
the role, correct.
Yeah. So yes. On the Hyper-V operating system, or the free one, if you will, It closely resembles Windows Server Core, except it's got this extra little command line interface that is specific to Hyper-V. It's not super, super helpful, and you can't run Hyper-V Manager. But I guess myself, I still want that ability to kind of touch locally, you know. So I'm with you in preferring, you know, the full Windows GUI. But on the Windows Server Core front, I've used it. I'm listening to the, you know, the preference that Microsoft has, especially in the future, to use it. But yeah, I don't know I've just yet to see people right now use it in production, so I just think that's a big step, you know, for us to take, to kind of just adopt that as the primary mode. But that's just my opinion. I'm to be determined, I guess, is the takeaway.
I mean, maybe it's because I'm just lazy, but you know, it's like Rick, like you just mentioned, you know, sometimes I just want to log into the box quickly, you know, and just go in there and check something.
Yeah.
And it's just easier. A little RDP into the host, you know.
Well, you can do RDP, but it's not really that useful on Windows Server Core.
Right. Or maybe, you know, maybe you got some kind of IP KVM or some KVM switch, you know. You log into the host, you know, do whatever it is you need to do, and then you're out.
And I think that Windows Server 8 supports the ability to transition from Core to full and then back to Core. I don't know if I'll trust it, but at least it's there. I don't know if I'd trust it without, you know, this is technology that we haven't, you know, fully got to know and love yet. So that's what I mean by that. It's not
right.
That I don't think it's going to work. It's just based on everything I know about Windows, that feels like a big, big jump. So,
right.
But, you know, we'll see. I'm going to give it a try. I'm learning a little bit on the provisioning. I probably should go the WDS route myself. How about Hyper-V roles? Do you do much of that, or are you in a smaller shop where, you know, your admins are your admins and you don't get any more separated than that?
No. Do it all. You know, add the roles. You know, whether it's file server roles, failover clustering, RDS, desktop experience, you know.
Well, how about within, like, you know, specifically within Hyper-V, there's additional roles that, like, okay, you can power on a VM, but you can't power it off, and those type of permissions. Have you gotten into any of that granularity?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
Because that's the other thing. I'll be honest with you. In the VMware world, it's pretty easy to set that up, right? So, you know, this person can, or this group can do these things, but it's not as intuitive with Hyper-V Manager. It's a little bit easier with System Center VMM. So,
correct.
I'm just curious if you've gone down that route yet. So, well, hey, Femi, how about, you know, open mic? Is there anything that you've learned with Hyper-V that you'd want to share with anybody?
Well, I think for people that are looking to get their feet wet, and I think this is a blog post that I saw either on your blog, Rick, or one of the Veeam blogs, is today there's almost no excuse to not be able to try Hyper-V, because you can, I know this is a competing product, but, you know, with VMware Workstation 8, you can now run Hyper-V.
That's right. Yep, that's Ricky Alcasum did a pretty good blog post that'll show you how with VMware Workstation 8, how to make a virtual machine that's running Hyper-V, Windows Server 2008 or the Hyper-V OS, and is able to power on 64-bit guests. So, you know, that's the one thing I'll give VMware credit for, is that it's really nice to simulate and set up a test environment, because you can do that with virtual ESXi hosts for a long time now. But in the case of virtual Hyper-V hosts, we have an option now where we can effectively simulate that. In fact, that's where most of my CSV experience, you know, I have one CSV cluster that's on bare metal, and then I've done it a million times on virtual, you know, Hyper-V hosts. So,
right.
Yeah, I'll put a link to that in the podcast notes. So you're right. You know, give it a try. Personally, I can go, you know, either way technology-wise, depending on the requirements of the environment and, you know, with the budgets and a whole bunch of other factors, you know, it's hard to make blanket recommendations.
So, backup vendors.
Uh-oh.
Please. Agentless backup. Host-based agentless backup. So when I call a backup vendor and they tell me that, yes, we support Hyper-V, please do not tell me to install agents in all my VMs. That is a fail. Massive fail.
Okay, got it. Opinion noted. What do you, you know, just make sure you check the news here coming up, Femi. And I know that you've been in our beta, so I'm not going to play like you don't know too much. So, yeah.
Please, this is the 21st century. Give us host-based backup.
It's coming with Veeam Backup and Replication V6. This quarter is the official answer, but I can tell you, Femi, very, 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 very soon. Let me check my email. Very soon.
Very excited for that product, by the way.
Outstanding. V6. Good to hear. We're not here to talk entirely Veeam, but I'm not going to stop you. So, well, hey, guys, let's wrap it up. Femi, it's been great having you back on the podcast.
Absolutely, Rick. Thanks for having me back on.